Good morning. Sarah Johnson is doing the children's class this morning. If anyone wants to attend, well, actually, you're supposed to be under five, but if anyone wants to attend, go ahead and she will meet you in the back for that. And we're glad to have you. You know, Jimmy's statement this morning about the thing we had for Ray last week was really meaningful. And Ray, it was very nice to honor you. It was more importantly just nice to get together and eat together. But it reminded me of the power of the spoken word. The fact that Jimmy can single-handedly overturn hundreds of centuries of Church of Christ tradition of not having lots and lots and an overabundance of potato salad is really the testament to the spoken word. I want to see if I can do the same. I'm going on a campaign against the deviled egg this morning. I hate deviled eggs. I don't understand the concept of the deviled egg. I don't know where the deviled egg began, but it should stop now. So the next time that we have the potluck, I just would like to remind all of you about the deviled egg and what an evil, just think of the name itself. It is named after Satan, and yet we have it at a quasi-church function. We should not do that, so it needs to stop now. But Kathy was not here last week, but she'd asked me how it went, and you know, we don't do those very often, and it's probably just a matter of inertia. It takes a little effort to get up and actually do it, but we got talking about it, and candidly, we thought it had been since Nadine was alive that we had had a potluck, which is far too long, and getting together as just fellow believers and as brethren is a good thing to do, so thanks for all who put it together, and it was fun for all of us to be together as we did that. You know, the old trite statement about time flies, it's trite for a reason because it's true. And if you think about it, we are in nearly the halfway point of this year. And so kind of thought it'd be a good time to talk about one of the things that we have talked about as our theme for the year, and that is, you see it up here, be doers of the word and not hearers only. And that's a real challenging statement, isn't it? To think about being not only hearers of the word, it is easy to be hearers of the word. Right now, everybody but me is a hearer of the word, and I guess if I listen to myself, I'm a hearer of the word as well. It is much more challenging to be a doer of the word. The reason it's challenging, I think, is because sometimes we just don't know what to do, do we? You know, it's like whenever you hear of someone's illness or someone in need or after a tragedy, you know, what do we always say? Let me know if there's anything I can do. And that's a good thing to say. I'm not discounting that. But it's harder to actually figure out what it is can be done and should be done, isn't it? Because you don't want to be invasive or intrusive. You don't want to be insensitive. But sometimes it's easy to forget in our desire not to be invasive or intrusive, that there are things that we can do. Maybe it's as simple as something like, let me go walk your dog if you need to stay at the hospital all day, or whatever the situation might be. There are ways to do something that aren't monumental, but can be very necessary. And as I thought about our phrase, and I was really glad that it was chosen this year, about being a doer of the word, that in itself is a really great challenge. So what I want to talk to you about today is just where are we at in this theme that we have set for the year of being a doer of the word. And I am not suggesting that at the end of today's lesson anybody has to go out and do some grand or monumental thing. Because either we're not in a position to do that, or I'm not sure it's even required for us to do that. It is the fact of doing something that I think as we talk about these ideas today, you'll see is really the important thing for us to do. And it's going to differ for everybody. There are things that you can do that I guarantee you don't want me to do. I always think back, and this will go back to ancient history for many of you. We used to have a tradition of going to someone's house once or twice a year, typically a widow of the congregation, who needed some minor house repair. And at the time, Richard Brand and others were there. And Richard, I remember this very clearly one day, I was getting in the way, basically, because I have zero, whatever the negative of that is, of mechanical or craftsmanship ability. But I remembered Richard one day in his own very polite way, basically telling me to go stand in the corner. And now, That was an important and necessary thing to do for the accomplishment of that project. My lack of involvement was the most important thing that could be done by me to get it done. But the reason I bring that up was all of it, there is something that everybody can do, whether it's bringing Richard the supplies to put the shingles up or whatever it might be. There's something that everybody can do. It's a question of how to understand what it is to do. I want to talk to you this morning about something I read about yesterday, and which was a eulogy given for the former Attorney General of the state of Delaware. You probably heard about it this week, and it was Beau Biden, the son of the current vice president. I've heard of the man, but in reading about him this week, I wish I had met him. Because regardless of where one falls on the political scale, this appeared to be a good man. And the president yesterday, in his eulogy for him, I saw this quote and I thought, this really just happens to fit in with what I'd otherwise thought about talking about. So let me reread it. You can beg God for a lighter burden, but if you're strong enough, it can also make you ask God for broader shoulders. Shoulders broad enough to bear not only your burdens, but the burdens of others. Shoulders broad enough to shield those who need shelter the most. Beau would ask God for broad shoulders. And this came in the context of talking about the various accomplishments in his life, none of which related to the various offices that he held or the things that he had done. For instance, the president talked about when the former senator for Delaware left office, everybody just assumed that Beau Biden, who was then the attorney general and very well known, would run for that open Senate seat. And it would make some sense. His dad had been a senator. He would become a senator. He declined the opportunity to do so because at the time he was, as attorney general, was engaged in a very significant prosecution related to child pornography and child molestation. And he said, it wouldn't be right for me to leave in midstream just because I wanted to hire office. And the president made that point in the context of, here was a man who died at the age of 46, but who had spent his life always looking for opportunities to serve, thus the phrase, broad shoulders. Always looking for other burdens that he could bear on behalf of others. And that's somewhat of what we're going to talk about today. I don't wake up every morning, I will tell you, and say, what burden of someone else can I bear? You know, you kind of figure, I got enough on my own plate, make it through the day, I'm good. And the less I have to do, even the better. I will suggest to you that is not the attitude that we receive reflected in certainly the New Testament, or I would think even the Bible as a whole. So really what we're going to talk about today, and you know the elders get up at the end of the lesson and say, here's the takeaway point. I'm going to spare Sandy or Duane to have to give the takeaway point. Here's the takeaway point. We are to pray and ask for broad shoulders. And as we talk about this, you're going to see broad shoulders is doing things for others that perhaps you would not otherwise do. Doing more than what is expected to be done. I'm not going to say doing more than what is required to be done, because as we talk about this, I will suggest to you that in fact it is required to be done. And this example of the quote last night, I thought was very interesting. If you have your Bible, turn to Genesis chapter 37. We're just going to kind of talk through the life of Joseph between chapter 37 and chapter 50. Now, when I say Joseph, what's the first thing everybody thinks of? What? Okay, he was put in a cave or a pit. Come on, what do we teach him in the... The coat of many colors, right? You know, they even made a Broadway play about Joseph and his Technicolor coat of many colors, and that is really dismissive of Joseph. Joseph's life was far more than being the guy who had the coat of many colors. What I want to think about, we're just going to kind of talk through this. Everybody remembers the story. Joseph was born. His brothers became jealous of him because he was clearly his father's favorite. They, as Dee Dee suggested, they captured him, put him in a pit. They originally were going to kill him, decided not to do that, so they put him in the pit. He's ultimately sold into slavery, ultimately finds his way to Egypt. And we see there in chapter 39 that immediately when he gets to Egypt, he is put in charge of everything in Egypt, standing immediately below the Pharaoh, and given great power and great latitude to do everything. And so you think at this point, boy, there's nothing could go greater for Joseph than this, until Potiphar's wife tempts him and accuses him of doing something Joseph did not do. So Joseph immediately gets thrown into prison because it is thought he had not only abused the trust that Pharaoh had placed in him, but that he had committed some sin with Potiphar's wife. And so he gets thrown into prison. And immediately when he gets thrown into prison, I like how chapter 39 talks about this, the guards recognized what a great person this Joseph was in all that he could do. And it talks about how the guards then put Joseph in prison. In some versions that you read say, in charge of everything that is done in the prison. So he rises even in prison to this great level. We fast forward over into the mid chapters of 41, 42. He's even put into a greater place in Pharaoh's house, to where it said he really is in the second of command, rides in the second chariot right beside Pharaoh. There's nothing that can be done, it said, without the consent of Joseph. And one of the things that comes about is that the famine, which Joseph had told Pharaoh about was going to happen when Joseph interpreted Pharaoh's dream, the famine of 7 years is going to come. Now, this famine followed years of great plenty. And during that period of time, Joseph stored up extra grain because he knew the famine was going to come. The famine comes. What happens then? The people of Egypt have to come to Joseph and ask for grain. Then the famine gets so bad that the people in the rest of the country have to come and ask Joseph for grain. And do you remember who had to come and ask Joseph for grain? The same brothers who had thrown him in the pit and were glad to be rid of him. Those same brothers come, and Joseph tests them a little bit. You know, he's going to find out, how it is that they respond. You remember, they send him back, and at the times that he sent him back, at one time, they put all the money that the brothers had given for the grain, and he puts it back in their sack. And when they get home, they see this money. They're all fearful because they're afraid that Joseph's going to think that they stole the grain. So they come back and they tell him, we didn't steal it at all. And Joseph agrees with that. And then he says, well, now I want to see your younger brother. Because you remember, Benjamin had been left at home with the dad, Jacob. I want to see the younger brother. So Benjamin comes. And what does Joseph do when Benjamin leaves? Puts the cup in the sack. All of this is just ways to continually get them to come back. And ultimately, Joseph reveals himself to the brothers. And there's a great scene that it talks about how Joseph had to excuse himself when he saw the brothers every time. And the Bible talks about it. He literally left the room and went and wept. And then he finds out that his father is still alive. And when he learns that, he goes and leaves the room and weeps, because he's so overcome with emotion. And yet each time the brothers come back to him, always needing the grain. What I want to look at real quickly is Genesis chapter 50. And we'll look at beginning in verse 15. After all of this occurred, and this is coming at a time after Joseph's father had died and Jacob is buried. Look at verse 15. When Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, it may be that Joseph will hate us and pay us back for all the evil that we did to him. So they sent a message to Joseph saying, your father gave this command before he died. Say to Joseph, please forgive the transgression of your brothers and their sin, because they did evil to you. And now please forgive the transgression of the servants of the God of your father. Joseph wept when they spoke to him. His brothers also came and fell down before him and said, behold, we are your servants. But Joseph said to them, do not fear, for am I in the place of God? As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, to bring it about that many people should be kept alive as they are today. So do not fear. I will provide for you and your little ones. Thus he comforted them and spoke kindly to them. Now, why bring up the story of Joseph in the context of this statement about broad shoulders? I bring it up because if there's ever a person that could have been, perhaps with some justification, vindictive toward his brothers, it's got to be Joseph, doesn't it? I mean, they left him in a pit to die. They deceived their father by putting the blood on the coat so the father would think he was dead and quit searching for him. If ever it were a person who could say, you know what, I'm in charge of everything, except for that small group of brothers who's going to come to me and ask for grain, it could have been Joseph, but he didn't. And it's an interesting turn of events that occurs at a very time when the country and when the brothers themselves and the family needs all of this. Who do they have to turn to? A man who throughout his relatively short life, Joseph was 30 years old when he went into Pharaoh's house and became second in command. A man in every situation that he was confronted by, had the proverbial broad shoulders. Everybody see that? I'm just fascinated by the fact that at the time that Joseph is thrown into prison because he supposedly slept with the king's wife, the prison guards turned to him and said, well, let's just have him do it because he knows how to get it done. At a time when Pharaoh had just met this young man, he makes him second in command. At a time when the brothers needed food for themselves and their wives and their children, they had to go to this man who later revealed himself as the brother. In every situation, Joseph had very, very broad shoulders. Now, you can stop here and say, yes, but that's Joseph. I'm not Joseph, never going to be Joseph. I don't have the strength of character of Joseph. I'm not going to be in the same opportunities that Joseph had. Whatever you might want to say, that's not an excuse not to have the proverbial broad shoulders. I think all of us know people that we know that can be absolutely relied upon to take care of situations when they occur. And you sometimes wonder, how can it be that everybody always turn to them? What do you recognize in that person? And it's easy to say, let so-and-so take care of it because you know they will get it done. You remember the famous adage, who are you supposed to give something to get it done? A busy person, right? The reason that they are constantly busy because others have seen in them the ability to get things done and more tasks are piled upon them. Is that a reason or an excuse not to be the person of broad shoulders? Because we say, well, that's not me. I don't think it is. The New Testament talks about here, and we're going to turn over to Galatians chapter 6, Paul, in verses 1 through 10, I think presents a particular challenge to us that allows us to answer the question, how am I going to have broad shoulders? Or more to the point, as we're talking about in our theme, how am I going to be something other than a hearer? How am I going to be a doer of the word? So let's read over in Galatians chapter 6, verses 1 through 10, but I want to focus on just really a couple pieces of it. Brethren, if anyone is caught in any transgression, chapter 6, verse 1, you who are spiritual should restore him in a spirit of gentleness. Keep watch on yourself, lest you be tempted. Here's the first key part of this. Bear one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. For if anyone thinks he is something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. But let each one test his own work, and then his reason to boast will be in himself alone and not in his neighbor. For each will have to bear his own load. One who is taught the word must share all good things with the one who teaches. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever one sows, that he will also reap. For the one who sows to his own flesh will also from the flesh reap corruption. But the one who sows to the Spirit will from the Spirit reap eternal life. And let us not grow weary of doing good. For in due season we will reap if we do not give up. So then, as we have opportunity, let us do good to everyone, and especially to those who are members of the household of faith. As we think about this concept of having broad shoulders, of helping others, these two passages, I think, this passage that Paul talks about here, these two excerpts, I think really presents to us the challenge. He says in verse 2 here, bear one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. And then in verse 9, and let us not grow weary of doing good, for in due season we will reap if we do not give up. So then, as we have the opportunity, let us do good to everyone, and especially to those who are of the household of faith. Have you ever thought about that you're fulfilling the law of Christ if you bear someone else's burden? Or are you saying to yourself at the time, this is a real pain? This person called me and ask me to do this at probably what is an inconvenient time. Now, I have to be honest. Sandy and Duane and I love serving you all. There are some times when I thought, this is a real pain. Well, just got to be honest about it. And I think John probably would say the same, and maybe Gary would say the same, and Joe, I don't know. It can be tiring. I don't say that just, you know, out of sense of whining. I think all of us would say that. It's a little bit different context, though, and I'm reminded of the obligation when you realize that by bearing the burden of another fulfills the law of Christ. And when I see the word law, maybe because it's what I do, it's not an option. It's a requirement. Remember how I said at the beginning, we're going to talk about not something nice to do, but what is required to do? I think that's exactly what's coming out of chapter 6 and verse 2 here. Bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. And then as he goes on here, I think Paul understood, even from his own life, that it can be wearisome. It can be tiring. And yet the great benefits that come from others. Because Paul says here, and let us not grow weary of doing good. He is recognizing that it is possible to become tired when trying to do good. And he's encouraging them, don't become weary. Because in due season you will reap if we do not give up. If ever there were a person who could have given up, it has to be Paul. A guy who literally is writing letters of encouragement to the Philippian brethren while he's sitting in a jail cell. I mean, if I'm Paul, I'm thinking, you know, I deserve a break today, right? Here I am in jail, and yet he somehow pins the letter to the Philippians to encourage the brethren and says there, I give thanks to God because of you. If anybody could have said, you know, let's talk about me for a while, it could have been Paul, but yet he's always thinking about others. He's telling them, don't give up. Don't grow weary in doing good. And then he gives them the challenge. Remember that challenge that we talked about at the beginning, which was, I know I'm supposed to do good. I know I'm supposed to bear one another's burdens, but what do I really do? Paul gives them the instruction in verse 10 there. So then, as we have opportunity, let us do good to everyone, and especially to those members of the household of faith. You can break this sentence down into some very practical applications. First, so then as we have opportunity. All of us are going to have different opportunities to bear one another's burdens. As I said, me bearing the burden of helping fix somebody's house is not good. I'll stand in the corner like Richard tells me to stand there. I'll bring you water. I'll do whatever. But the opportunity for me to do something is different than the opportunity for you to do something. Wells Fargo ran a commercial last night, which was one of those, you know, tug at the heartstrings commercials. It showed this elderly lady getting her hair done. I don't know if anybody else saw it. The elderly lady is sitting there getting her hair done. And I'm thinking, what does this got to do with Wells Fargo? It showed another lady sitting there looking at her iPad. But they're both in the beauty salon. And at the end, it shows the lady who'd been sitting there with the iPad walking out and kind of holding by the arm the elderly lady whose hair was being done. And the point was, and it said on the bottom, what are you going to do in your retirement? And I forgot the name of the lady. So-and-so has chosen to help others. And they illustrated that by the fact of she sat there and waited and brought the lady to the beauty salon, you know, ideally every week or something like that. The point was the opportunity to do good that the lady who sat there on the iPad had, who had chosen in her retirement to help someone who could not otherwise get to the beauty salon, is what she chose to do to help bear another's burden. Now, let's be honest. The opportunity of time is something that the lady who sat there on her iPad had that others don't have because of work or school or family obligations or whatever. But it just struck me as I saw that ad about here was someone who had the opportunity and did good with the opportunity she had. And I think that's exactly what Paul is talking about. Then he says, let us do good to everyone. You know, it's real easy to do good to everyone, but to do good to no one. Here's what I mean by that. All of us can say, yes, we ought to feed the world. Now, reality, are you going to be able to feed the world? I'm not going to be able to feed the world. Nobody has enough money to go feed the world. Can you feed the stranger next to you who's in need of a meal? Yeah, I could probably do that. All of us can think of those macro examples that we can't do and say, well, it can't be done. But we could probably think of micro examples of things we could do that we can do. The question is whether we will do it. And I think that's what Paul is talking to. You know, let us do good to everyone without regard to, and then fill in the blank, race, age, ethnicity, social position, whatever it might be. Let us do good to everyone. How many of you have passed out your blessing bag? Remember when you did that? What kind of reaction did you get when you did that? I just finally gave mine about a week away. What kind of reaction did you get? Really? Okay. Okay, anyone else? Faye?
I gave mine to the lady that cleans my house, and she in turn gave it to a gentleman who was homeless.
Okay.
I had a good reaction. The man was very thankful. He thanked me, and he said, God bless you.
Okay, so Blanche said he had a good reaction. The gentleman ended up saying, God bless you. It seems like all of us somewhat had the same experience when giving out. Now, monetarily, I don't know what the value of the blessing bag was that we gave out, you know, the value of the contents. But that was a way, and Isaac led the effort here, that we had chosen to do good to everyone, understanding that everyone doesn't have to be defined as everybody in the city of Jacksonville. It can be everyone with whom we come in contact and when we had that opportunity. Now, Paul concludes this and really, truly does bring it home. Let us do good to everyone, and especially to those who are of the household of the faith. Now, I have to admit, I have heard people preach that verse as to say we are to only do good to those who are members of the household of the faith. I don't think the text supports that. I certainly don't think the spirit of which Paul is writing supports that. But he does put a very special obligation on doing good to those who are members of the household of faith. And now this is the proverbial preaching to the choir, because I will suggest to you, and I think you already know this, that this congregation does very, very, very well in doing that. So by me saying these things is not in any way suggesting we're not helping out one another. It is a reminder, though, that Paul gives us that we are to be especially mindful to those of the household of faith. I would suggest to you that because we do so well within this body already, that we have an obligation to extend the view even a little bit further to those who we know to be members of the household of faith. One of the beauties of social media, and we've been talking a lot about it in our class on Sunday as to some of the ills of it, but one of the beauties of it is you can find out about situations you would not otherwise know about. And as we learn about other members of the church who are in particular need, it is always interesting and fascinating to see how quickly the response is received. Was it you, Isaac, who told us about the lady who had the illness and they needed to raise a certain amount of money? I think we've talked about it. Less than 12 hours, the cost to pay for this operation solved easily. Wasn't that such? Yeah, and you know, that's the beauty of the ability to get the message out. More so, I think it's the beauty of people understanding, let us do good to everyone, and especially to those who are members of the household of faith. So as we conclude this morning, let's take a six-month pause here. And the six-month pause is to think about our theme, be doers of the word and not hearers only. Let us think about how you're going to make a practical application to that. And again, not talking about grand gestures. We're talking about doing something that is, as we have opportunity, let us do good to everyone, and especially those who are members of the household of faith. understanding that Paul says we are to bear one another's burdens. Not optional, but we are to bear one another's burdens. And when it becomes weary, Paul reminds us, let us not grow weary of doing good soon. Why? Do good. Why? Because in due season we will reap if we do not give up. I understand that that can be a challenge. That's why Paul is giving us the encouragement that he does there. I pray that all of us have broad shoulders. And some people are going to have shoulders that appear to be much broader than others because of their talents, because of their resources, because of their opportunity. That doesn't matter. All of us can have broader shoulders than we currently have. It's a question of, as Paul tells us, to look for that opportunity. Well, this has not been a traditional gospel sermon, but it is grounded in what the Bible tells us we are to do. We put this in the category of living the Christian life, but we don't want to conclude a service without giving everyone an opportunity to respond to the gospel in any way that might be necessary, and we'll do that as we stand and sing.